Grace, mercy, and peace from God our Father and our Lord Jesus Christ to you. I will be taking the message subject from two verses in Proverbs 4. Proverbs 4, verse 18 and 19. As is quite frequent on a Sunday morning, if you have a responsibility in the function of the corporate worship, it seems like there's a thread of commonality throughout the subject matter of the songs, the devotional, and the Sunday school somewhat all fit together. And I find that to be the case this morning, the songs being about pilgrimage and guidance, and then also the devotional and such. And I don't know, I guess the message comes out of sort of a what I feel I'm facing in my own life, but I think it's familiar or common to each of us at some point in our lives, and so I feel like this message is spoken to me. Some of the things I say this morning will be directed and to my own heart, reminders. Let's read these two verses in Proverbs 4, 18 and 19. But the path of the just is as a shining light that shineth more and more unto the perfect day. The way of the wicked is as darkness. They know not at what they stumble. I'm sure all of you have taken the time to watch a sunrise. It's dark in the morning, and you watch for the first streaks of dawn. Maybe you're camping, and a clear morning, you see the first light. And as that light gets brighter and brighter, you see things more clearly around you. This is the picture I get that the proverb writer wrote. And eventually, the sun comes up and lights everything up. It's not like we walk into a room and flip the light on. The Lord has a little bit of gentleness to his nature in that he has a dimmer switch, or maybe we could say he turns the light on gradually so that our eyes adjust. And I find that very interesting, that it seems that's very typical to the way our lives are as we look at the scope of our lives. Notice the two contrasts here, that the path of the just has this direction towards clarity, from unknown to known, from unclear to clear. It gets clearer. But the way of the wicked is as darkness. They know not at what they stumble. So the path of the just has a light that guides them. And we've heard the analogy that it is not that we know the destination or can see the destination clearly, but rather we go in the light that we have. If we want to make a trip, we get in our vehicles, we drive, the light shines not all the way to our destination, but on the path as we go. The psalmist writer wrote, "Thy word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path." Now, some of you also have experienced the probably in your lifetime, where you wake up at night and you attempt to make your way around a room. Maybe it's, if you're like I am, I don't like to flip the lights on because either I don't want to disturb somebody else that's in the room or in close. And so I try to find my way around, even in a strange place at night. I sort of take my, you know, get my bearings before I go to bed. Okay, there's where the bathroom is, there's the door, and there's the nightstand, and make sure don't trip over this. But you try to feel your way around, and there's just not clarity. And eventually you might stub your toe or knock something over or, But when we have a light, even a small light, a flashlight or something, it brings clarity. It opens the way for us to know how to go without stumbling. The way of the wicked is not that way. When without God's help and without his light, we stumble, we fumble, and go attempt to find our way and end up hurting ourselves or others. A similar scripture that I'd like to refer to, well known in 1 Corinthians 13, and I'll be reading these few verses in the Phillips translation. 1 Corinthians 13, verse 9 through 12, for our application this morning. For our knowledge is always incomplete, and our prophecy is always incomplete. And when the complete comes, that is the end of the incomplete. When I was a little child, I talked and felt and thought like a little child. Now that I'm a man, my childish speech and feeling and thought have no further significance for me. At present, we are men looking at puzzling reflections in a mirror. The time will come when we shall see reality whole and face to face. At present, all we know is a little fraction of truth. But the time will come when I shall know it as fully as God knows me. This is a principle that is a part of every one of our lives, young and old, man or woman. It's a universal principle that affects all of us. All of us are on a path in our lives. And this principle is happening to us as we live our lives. What that principle is that I'm referring to is that we gain from our experience more and more clarity. We don't, as a young child, we have an understanding of life, limited understanding of life. But as we get older, which is what the apostle wrote here in 1 Corinthians 13, is that he compares our life to and our understanding to that of a child, and then that of an adult. As we become an adult, we look back on our childhood and say, you know, my understanding was very limited back there. And we actually sometimes can't even relate with that anymore, is the way we thought as a child. It's like the world has a complete new dimension to it than what we thought about as a child. And that is how it is with all of our lives and the path that we have. Like I said, we are going from unknown to known, from unclear to clear, from darkness to light. This is the path of the just. Or we continue to stumble in darkness in our own blindness. Now, at any point in our life as we live, we may think that we know or understand the big picture. We refer to the big picture of our life. for our family, or for our church, or for our brothers or sisters. In reality, no one understands exclusively what God alone knows and reveals in His own time. In fact, sometimes when we get into trouble, it's very similar to what Job and his friends were dealing with. Job's friends attempted to counsel him with their limited insight. They felt they had superior insight to the big picture and attempted to project it on him, their friend. In the end, isn't it amazing that they all had some surprises? God had the big picture. There's a verse in the New Testament that would indicate that even Jesus himself is limited to the big picture. Now, don't ask me to explain that, but Mark chapter 13, verse 32 says, "But of that day and that hour knoweth no man, no, not the angels which are in heaven, neither the Son, but the Father." And like I say, I can't explain that, but somehow I have to believe that it's the truth. What am I saying by this? Let me give just a few illustrations from Scripture where this is true. The first one I thought of, and there's many examples in Scripture, is found in 2 Samuel chapter 7. King David, a visionary, had a noble desire to build the Lord a house. He had been a great success with God's blessings on his life, and now he had this grand plan. It says here, "And it came to pass when the king sat in his house, and the Lord had given him rest from around about from all his enemies, that the king said unto Nathan the prophet, See, now I dwell in a house of cedar, but the ark of God dwelleth with curtains. And Nathan said to the king, Go, do all that is in thine heart, for the Lord is with thee. And it came to pass that night that the word of the Lord came unto Nathan, saying, Go and tell my servant David, Thus saith the Lord, Shalt thou build me an house for me to dwell in? Whereas I have not dwelt in any house since the time I have brought up the children of Israel out of Egypt, even to this day, but have walked in a tent and in a tabernacle. And in all the places where I have walked with all the children of Israel, spake I a word with any of the tribes of Israel, whom I commanded to feed my people Israel, saying, Why build ye not me a house of cedar? Now therefore, so shalt thou say unto my servant David, Thus saith the Lord of hosts, I took thee from the sheepcote, from following the sheep, to be ruler over my people, over Israel, and I was with thee whithersoever thou wentest, and have cut off all thine enemies out of thy sight, and have made thee a great name like unto the name of the great men that are in the earth. Moreover, I will appoint a place for my people Israel, and I will plant them that they may dwell in the place of their own, and move no more, neither shall the children of wickedness afflict them any more as before time. And since the time that I commanded the judges to be over my people Israel, and have caused thee to rest from all thine enemies, also the Lord telleth thee that he will make thee an house." And he goes on here to say that he'll have a son, and that his son will be the one to fulfill this plan to build God's house. Really, what God desired is what he still desires today, is to build a spiritual house with his people rather than a physical house necessarily. And I think that's what I get from this, is that God wanted him to be faithful and to be a house, that a habitation for his people. So God had the plan here, and he laid it out through his prophet to David, the leader. Another one I think about is the life of Saul. Saul was another visionary who was on the road to Damascus. He had intent on completing what he believed was God's work until a light shone in his way and struck him down. We know the story well. He was struck down on the road to Damascus, and was temporarily blinded. He was led by his fellow men into the city of Damascus. And there, another man who also had a vision from the Lord, his name was Ananias, was to go and lay hands on the apostle Paul, which God had called to do a special work. Ananias had a little bit of hesitation on this because he had heard the reputation of Saul, and he felt, I take Ananias as to be a bit more of a timid person, kind of a stay out of danger type based on the reality, and he sort of objected to the idea that God called this vision into question, and yet God said, yes, this man is who I choose to do my work. And the beautiful part about it is that Ananias followed that leading. He followed that light. This is the path of the just. When it is unclear to us, that we still follow the truth. Now, it is possible for us to think that we are on the right path and yet be blind. And that's a dangerous path to be on. In John 9, we have the account of Jesus healing a blind man. And the leaders of that day had a problem when they met this blind man and established that it was, in fact, a miracle that happened to him, that he was seeing, and yet he was born blind. They asked his parents, and there was a discussion there and a dispute about whether Jesus was really authentic, because he was violating the Sabbath. And Jesus said these words to them in the end of that chapter, John 9. And Jesus said, "For judgment I came into this world, that they which see might, that they which see not might see, and that they which see might be made blind." And some of the Pharisees which were with him heard these words and said unto him, "Are we blind also?" Jesus said unto them, "If ye were blind, ye should have no sin, but now ye say, we see, therefore your sin remaineth." So here we see that it is possible that we think that we see, and yet we are blind, which is a dangerous position to be in. Speaking of light and the path of the just, Jesus, in one final discourse with his followers, at one point said in John 12, "Father, glorify thy name." And there came a voice from heaven saying, "I have both glorified it and will glorify it again." The people, therefore, that stood by and heard it said that it thundered. Others said, "An angel spake to him." Jesus answered and said, "This voice came not because of me, but for your sakes. Now is the judgment of this world. Now shall the prince of this world be cast out, and I, if I be lifted up from the earth, will draw all men unto me. This he said, signifying what death he should die. The people answered him, We have heard out of the law that Christ abideth forever. And how sayest thou, The Son of Man must be lifted up? Who is this Son of Man? Then Jesus said unto them, Yet a little while is the light with you. Walk while ye have the light, lest darkness come upon you. For he that walketh in darkness knoweth not whither he goeth. While ye have light, believe in the light, that ye may be the children of light. Notice here, the people thought that they had the plan. They knew what the Messiah was supposed to do. They said they had heard out of the law that Christ abides forever. How often do we have that idea also in our lives, that this is something that we absolutely know, and yet God has a different plan? And here he enlightened their understanding, is that the Son of Man came actually to die. He brings up an interesting thing here about walking in the light. Walk in the light while ye have the light, lest darkness come upon you. And this is something that we need to recognize in our lives as we walk the path that God lays out in front of us. It may not be known, but one of the things that we need to do is to walk in the light that we do have. And I have that as one of the 3 points that I'd like to conclude with here. Some of us are facing, maybe all of us, are facing some unprecedented circumstances in our life journey and struggle to grasp the big picture that God has for us. We may not understand the purpose or course God has us on. And it's in that context that I want to give 3 reminders or encouragements to each of us to remember as God leads us and the path becomes clearer in our lives. The first one, point number one, is to a complete surrender to his lordship. And what was already brought out in the devotional this morning, Brother Levi said that the Apostle Paul, Saul at that time, when he was struck down on the road to Damascus, responded to the Lord's call on his life as, Lord, what wilt thou have me to do? This means giving up any selfish ambitions or ulterior motives to allow him to be Lord of our lives. This is the first step in complete surrender. It is possible to think that we are attempting to follow the Lord and have ulterior motives. 2 quick examples that I think about, and that is the example of Balaam, when he was called by Balak to go and curse the people of Israel. Balaam attempted to satisfy all demands that were on him, God's demands, Balak's demands, and the demands of his own desire. And it seems he failed in that. And it wasn't until God opened his eyes to the fact that his life was in danger and his donkey talked to him that he recognized that God's plan was not what he was accomplishing. Another one was a leader of the New Testament, Peter himself. The Apostle Paul had to approach him or correct him when he caved into peer pressure, seemingly to save his reputation. Just a reminder that wherever we are, it is possible for us not to be grasping the whole picture that God has for us. But again, complete surrender to His Lordship is a key. Point number two is to obey what we know. What God, what light, as we know, as we go on the path of the just, as the Lord gives us light, we obey in that light and walk through the doors that He opens. In other words, doing the next right thing. There was a young boy who was just ready to go to college. And he approached his dad and said, Dad, in 6 weeks, you know I'm going to college. And if you were thinking of giving me a going away gift, I'd have a suggestion for you. His father smiled at him and said, Okay, what is your suggestion? The boy's eyes sparkled as he said, Dad, if you could find me a secondhand Ford that I could paint up how I want to and take along with me to college, that would be great. His father looked at him smiling and said, Wouldn't you like a brand new one? One that no one else drove before? The boy's eyes opened wide and said, Really, Dad? Could you afford a new car like that? Could I actually have one? The father responded to him and said, Well, maybe so. I'll not promise today, but we'll see. The next night, his father came home from the office and pulled his boy aside and said, I have a personal favor I want to ask of you. I have a book here that I want you to read. He said, it's a brand new book, and at that time, the books had leaves that were not cut. And so you had to cut the pages as you read it or before you read it. And so he told the boy, I want you to read this book. And as you read this book, as you read each page, I want you to cut the leaves of the page. And I want you to read the book in its entirety. Okay, the boy said. After about a week, his father asked him, or he asked his dad, Dad, what about the car? Did you make your decision about the car yet? The father said, Did you read the book? The boy said, Yeah, I've read some, about half of it. Once more, the father said, Read the book as soon as you can, and read it completely. The boy went up to his room and read some more in the book. Later, the boy kept asking again, Dad, what about the car? Have you decided about the car yet? The father said, How about the book? How far have you read in the book? Every time the boy would ask about the car, the dad would say, Have you read the book yet? Soon it was the night before he left for college. He came to his dad and said, Dad, seriously, I don't understand you. You and I have had such a good relationship. We've been frank with each other. I don't understand about the car. You told me I didn't get the car yet, and I'm going off to college tomorrow. What are you thinking? Son, the father said, Go bring the book. The boy brought the book to him and stammered a little and said, I read everything but the last few pages. The father took out a penknife out of his pocket and cut the last few pages. And out of the last few pages slithered a check that was for an automobile sales company for the full price of a brand new vehicle. The boy grabbed the check and danced around in glee and said, Oh, thank you, Dad. I, until he realized that was a part of the plan. It finally unfolded. he realized that he was supposed to read the book in its entirety and hadn't done so. And as tears streamed down his face, he said, he tore up the check and threw it in the fire and said, "Dad, I don't deserve this." The father pulled him down into the arm of the chair and said, "We miss a lot of things in life because we're unwilling to fulfill completely what we're asked to do." But he said, "I think you learned your lesson, so we'll go and get the car. It's been waiting for you for a month." For a month, he forfeited the blessing that he would have had if he would have read the book immediately. And what the point is on this is that we obey what we know, as the Lord sheds light on our path that is unclear, that we walk in the way that he sets out for us. And I find this very practical in my workplace, is that when I have things that I do that are a little complicated and I don't understand, one of the things that helps is when I do the next thing that I do know. And oftentimes it opens up ahead. And that is such a type of the way this path of the just goes, is when we follow what we do know. The third thing, and last, is that we rest in his provision and power. When we do our part, he will keep his promise. It's an exercise of faith. And this I think of in the example of the three Hebrew children that knew what they were to do. They didn't know the end. They didn't know the outcome of their journey, but they were obedient to what they knew. And then they committed it to the Lord and rested in that. They said to the king, "Look, we know that we don't know whether the Lord will save us from the fire that you built. But we do know that we will be faithful in not bowing down to your image." Dr. James Chalmers, a missionary to cannibals in the South Sea Islands, gave this story, this account. He said he set up camp among these cannibals, and day after day he pled with the chief to be able to preach to his people. He could speak their language. And he told the chief of the story of Jesus with a very fervent heart. He said the chief listened attentively, but was not convinced. What he didn't pay a whole lot of attention to was that the chief's son was sitting behind them as they had their discussions. Until one day, the chief's son came to his tent and asked him some very personal and penetrating questions that startled him. The weeks wore on, and one night, and he was basically a prisoner among these cannibals, but one night, the tom-toms started banging and beat, and the tribe got together and built a huge bonfire. And it seemed to Dr. James that he knew what this was all about. Soon two giants came and got him and led him to the center of the ring and tied him to a stake. The old chief walked out and basically pronounced a powwow over him of a death sentence. There was wild dancing and carousing late into the night. Finally, things became a little still, and the chief walked out with both hands stretched out and made a speech. And at the end of his speech, he asked the missionary, he said, "Where is your God? If he is able to deliver you, I will believe on him." There was a lot of noise after that, with the yells and delight of the dance. And in the middle of that, the old chief's son walked out into the clearing with a long sword that had been taken from a pirate boat. He walked into the middle of the circle, and facing the rest of his tribe, he whipped out this sword, and a hush fell over the crowd. And he said in a clear, unfaltering voice, "The missionary's God is busy tonight, so he sent me to deliver him. There will be no feast tonight. The missionary will live. If any of you objects, I am waiting." A long silence followed, was broken only by a few whispers, and then the old chief stepped out and walked towards his son. His son pointed the long sword down at the ground in front of his father and said in a quiet voice, "You may come 2 steps, but no further." The old chief stopped, and looking at his son, there was admiration written over his face. He lifted both his hands and turned back to his tribe and said, "Tonight, I give up my position as chief. My son will be your chief from now on. Obey his commands." He turned to his son and said, "May I have the permission to cut the ropes that bind the prisoner?" James Chalmers wrote after that incident the verse, "I know whom I have believed, and am persuaded that he is able to keep that which I have committed unto him against that day." The path of the just is as a shining light that shineth more and more unto the perfect day. Again, 3 points. Complete surrender to his lordship. Obey what we know, and rest in his provision and power. I will invite you to kneel in prayer.